Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, tons of people take a multivitamin, and it's important to choose one that's top quality. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. It's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially during cold and flu season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. That's a difficult sentence to read, I'm not going to lie. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/sportsdrink. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/sportsdrink to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Sports Drink Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of The Bird Calls. I'm your host, David Grubb, and I'm joined by David Fisher and the editor-in-chief of thebirdrights.com. Mr. Ali Cosell, this is episode 371, and we're going to put a bow on the 2021-22 season. There's a lot to get into, but I think first let's just start with the playoffs. And I'm going to ask you guys a couple of questions about the playoffs, and then we'll move into some overall evaluations of the team. Sound fair?
Sounds great. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we'll start with this. Ollie, what were your three biggest takeaways from this series for the New Orleans Pelicans?
Brandon Ingram looking like a superstar, that he can carry a team, two wins in on the biggest stage, and his first appearance on that stage. Number two, the rookies. We had known that they were going to be a big part of the foundation, that they had cemented themselves, right, as key players going forward. But, boy, in the playoffs, how much did they step up individually, right? Just take your pick in the moments, whether it's Jose, right, Trey, Herb. And then third, I think the fact that there's an identity, right, that started with, of course, Willie Green as the head coach, but the fact that the players carried it out and the Pelicans knew who they were, right, crashing the – glass, looking to be aggressive, and you know, just carry out a certain game plan. So the fact that this young team made so many strides that were winning impact type of plays and mentality and strategy, whatever you want to call it, that bodes so well for the future. So yeah, those are my three.
Fish, let's have yours.
My first takeaway referring to the rookies is they're not scared of the moment. None of them are. Jose was taking and making big shots. He
losing teeth.
he enjoyed the challenge of guarding Chris Paul and navigating a million screens up at the top of the key. Herb Jones, absolutely not scared at all. We haven't talked about enough. I mean, he shot over 40% behind the arc throughout this series. And then Trey Murphy had a ton of big shots. And he took even more that, you know, he had one towards the end of game two that it was like, oh, should you be shooting that? Yeah, he's going to shoot it. He wants to deliver knockout punches. So just absolutely not scared of the moment from the rookies. The second big takeaway that I took from it was we still need more defensive versatility. I hope that that's what the Pelicans front office has taken from of it. Jonas is great in the drop. Jonas was a monster on the glass on both ends. Let's not take anything away from him. And Larry Nance pitched in, you know, on both ends. And I love his, you know, fit on the roster. But the Pelicans, what they wanted to get from Jackson Hayes and what they actually got from Jackson Hayes, there's a big delta between those two things, especially defensively. And then the third biggest thing is, man, Brandon Ingram, not only is he ready for it, like on the offensive end, more ready than I had any hopes of that he's ready. But if you watched, and like he wasn't getting the top end defensive assignment, but if you watched him, especially towards the end of games in game five and game six, like he's figuring something out and he's understanding what locked in on the defensive end means, even if, you know, his assignment isn't the most important assignment. What he's doing off the ball defensively and how he's helping, how he was digging down and challenging on those eight and pick and pop things. And that bodes extremely well for what I think we're going to see from the Pelicans next year.
And what about you, David? You throw something in, Grub, if you got something.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, my focus is always like just on the less so on players, and I like to look at the team picture and things like that. So mine were definitely identity. You understand what this team is supposed to be now. They are supposed to be terrorists defensively and get into the open floor. And in the half court situations, they need to operate quickly. And where Brandon, you have an offense that is already set up to have three layer scoring without having to have three layer scorers. So you also have those on the floor. You have an interior presence right now in Jonas Valanciunas, who showed that he's not going to be a consistent, you know, he wasn't going to lead the NBA in three-point shooting. But you have the interior scoring and a guy who can also pop from the outside. If you have a healthy Zion Williamson, you have the best interior scorer in the NBA. In Brandon Ingram, you have one of the best mid-range scorers in the NBA. In C.J. McCollum, you have one of the best perimeter scorers and someone who can score in the mid-range and finish at the rim. And we saw Ingram improve that as well. So you have an offense that is already extremely versatile. And you have a defense now that's capable of getting you into favorable matchups in transition where the defense has to try to figure out who to cover. So the Pelicans finally have an idea of what they want to be and the personnel to make that happen. There are still some holes, and I think that's the thing that also the playoffs exposed, is that, like you said, mm-hmm. there's a lack of interior defense, and there's a lack of a ball handler who can control the offense when, you know, you had Brandon Ingram injured in game six, the end of game six and through game seven. Handling the ball wasn't going to be something he could do as well. And it was forced, really, it's CJ or Alvarado or no one. And if a team knows that, you're kind of limited. So the Pelicans need someone else who can handle the ball in those situations and initiate an offense to get Jonas a quick shot when Ayton's not in the game, to get those kinds of things going. So those are two things that I think that you saw, because the Suns did have 3 and 4 point guards able to bring out, whether it's, you know, a varying effectiveness, but they had the options there available to them. And then I think the last thing was, again, I think I agree completely on Brandon Ingram, is that for the first four games of the series, he was the best player in the series. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, outside of, you know, what Chris Paul was able to do down a stretch in game two. I mean, in game one, am I missing it? Am I reversing them? But outside of that, Ingram was clearly the best player over those first 16 quarters. And I think that him being hurt limited him a bit in game seven, in particular. And I think it affected him at the fourth quarter of game six. You know, he shot really poorly down the stretch. I think those fingers bothered him. But he wouldn't say that. And I think that that's was a lot of maturity on Brandon's part, that you just saw him willing to take ownership of this team throughout the course of the season. And I think that is an interesting dynamic to look forward to next year, because now Brandon has put in 3 years of work to be the leader of this team. So when you bring Zion in and you have CJ, who has, and you have Larry Nance Jr., who have all, you know, we're padding this, Brandon Ingram, they were really pushing Brandon as a leader. I want to see how the dynamic works. And I'm not saying that as a negative. I want to see how that carries over. Can Brandon figure out as the leader now to pull Zion into a place where he wants ownership? He wants that same type of presence on this roster, because it's Brandon's responsibility really to create that space so that there isn't as an awkwardness as they try to figure out. There will be some figuring out next year between that on the court, because they just haven't had the time on the floor. But I want to see how that transition works with them as players. And I'm looking forward to that, because that's how that's the next step for them to become champions.
In education, we call that scaffolding. We're going to build off of Brandon Ingram's successes and hopefully make those Zion Williamson successes too. I like that.
Yeah, and let's be honest. The biggest thing that stuck out to me in the whole series overall was that the Suns just played less mistake basketball, right?
Yeah.
I thought they should have won game three. That's where B.I. was shining. That was C.J. McCollum's best game. And I feel like the Pelicans have simply lost because, let's just face it, pick your poison. Turnovers, you name it. Pelicans did so much worse, right? They just didn't value every possession, right, like you should in the playoffs. And it came back to bite them. They were that close. And that's the thing, right, David?
Both. Yeah, I think that was our thought from the beginning of the series.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Pelicans – to the Pelicans' credit, they made it a situation where Chris Paul had to be nearly perfect, or in the case of Game 6, perfect.
Or damn near completely perfect.
Exactly. And I mean, yeah, Ayton shot 71%, but I mean, he's shooting 71% in an area that players typically don't shoot. I mean, at some point, you're going to allow something and you have to tip your cap. And the Pelicans clearly had a game plan where we're going to make them take the most difficult, lowest value shots from an analytic perspective. And the Suns shot so well that they won anyways, but it's still the right call. I mean, because we saw what happened when the Pelicans tried to blitz Chris Paul and stuff like that. He ate it up, and then the Suns were playing 4-on-3 on the back end, and they were getting wide open threes and dunks. Like, they were playing the percentages. Like, you can't take it all away from the Phoenix Suns. Not with Chris Paul coach.
No, but here's the thing. We see room for improvement, right? Whether it's with the play or with the roster.
Yeah, yeah. They have, but that's what we thought going into this series. That's why, you know, I think that the consensus was this was the opponent you wanted. Mm-hmm. This was the opponent you wanted. You got to go up against.
I'll be honest. I wanted the Jazz, but anyways. Go ahead.
I mean, in a real sense, like, you know, this was, it proved to be a winnable series against the best team in the NBA. It proved to be a winnable series against the best team in the NBA. There is the value in the footage and the experience, both of those things, of getting to see what that toughness was like. It's not about just getting a cheap series win. They wouldn't have got this, would have earned this one. It's not about beating the Jazz and getting beaten in the second round. But if you come up here and you played toe-to-toe with the Suns, and they knew you as well as you knew yourselves. They know Monty knows every set that Willie has. Monty knows what Willie's thinking almost. They are that in tune, and vice versa. So to get challenged and tested that way by a team that's going to execute better, that a team that's not going to turn it over in those situations, a team that's going to make its free throws, a team that's going to find the guy who and get those opportunities for the guy who's hot and understand how to do that consistently. I thought that's phenomenal for the Pelicans to get to see that and witness that and say, yeah, that's what we have to be like. Like, not we don't have to be them, not their personality. We are the Pelicans. We're going to do it a different way. But that mentality of understanding, this is your job. Jay Crowder does not care that he got 1 point tonight. they won game one. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's, I think that,
David,
that
for, I threw out game one. Let's face it. I mean,
no, but what I'm saying is, Ali, what I'm talking about is the total. I'm not talking about any individual game. I'm talking about the totality of the series to see guys understand their roles and not care because they're trying to win a championship.
No, absolutely. No, I'm just throwing out game one because of, seriously, you and I, all of us have never been through a play-in tournament, right? Playing elimination and getting into the playoffs. But let's admit it. The Pelicans just didn't look like they were there mentally, like the Suns were in that game one, right? Especially half. That's all I'm trying to say.
They didn't look like they were there at the beginning of game six. I mean, game five, excuse me.
Game six, five. They were up by 10 at halftime.
I'm not saying game six. I said game five.
Oh, okay.
In Phoenix, when they were down, when they needed to come back after they had won game four. And they had an opportunity to go to a tired Phoenix team, and you saw how worn out Chris Paul was.
Sure.
And they just did not play well.
No, game five they did. They played poorly.
I mean, Jonas, how many gimmies did they miss at the rim? Right, all sorts of things. Right, that we didn't see throughout the regular season. That's all I'm saying. I'm not even counting.
Jonas was missing through the first three games. And we talked about his lack of athleticism against Ayton. And the reason he was able to score was when they stopped putting him in those positions to have to get quick putbacks. He was getting those out of ISOs, and he was getting those out of post-ups. He was able to push Ayton under the basket in those situations, and they still missed opportunities to get the ball.
Yeah, they didn't take advantage of that enough, right?
Yeah,
that was because we said they had to
– Phoenix, but you guys
know Jonas had to match Ayton for points. And on the nights that Jonas didn't match Ayton for points, that's when Phoenix typically won.
I mean, Phoenix is beating the crap out of Dallas right now. Like, let's give the Pelicans credit, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Phoenix is really freaking good.
Yeah. They're really good.
Yeah, minus Booker, too. Yes.
So, I mean, yeah. I mean, and you know, people say, well, it's minus Zion. But this team didn't play with Zion.
Yep.
So they don't know what it's like to play with Zion. So it's not the same as having a guy like Booker who's in the MVP conversation versus somebody who had not played a single game.
They learned how to play without him. They didn't count on him exactly.
Yeah, they have no expectations. They have no understanding. It's not a fair comparison. And again, that's why I said it wasn't fair to Zion. It wasn't fair to Zion for people to put memes of having Zion in a glass and saying, well, it's time to break that glass. What are you saying about what Brandon Ingram and those guys have been doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think they deserved better than what they were getting in those moments when people were calling Zion the savior in those situations. I didn't think it was fair to Zion, and I really didn't think it was fair to the guys who were playing 40 minutes, you know, trying to give it their best in those situations.
No, but admittedly, those talks I thought died once we hit the play-in tournament, right?
No, it was still in the playoffs.
I thought it died some.
Fish, do you remember that meme? It was the cartoon. It was Brandon Ingram looking up at the glass.
Oh, yeah. I saw that midway through the series.
Yeah, but who posted that?
I mean, it was Pelicans Twitter.
There, Ollie. There were people. I'm just right, saying it was part of the fan base was talking. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's something easy to reach to, but most people understood that this team knew, and I won't ever forget how Josh Hart, right? Talked about how we have no expectation of coming back. That was back in December, I want to say. And they played like it. So a lot of us understood that this team knew what they needed to do with the guys that were on the court, and they did, right? So it wasn't like you said, David, and I completely agree with that. It wasn't like Booker all of a sudden going out in game two with an injury. It wasn't like that.
This guy wasn't there, not for one game. And that's just, it just wouldn't have, it wasn't right. It wasn't right. It wasn't right to put that pressure on anybody, on any one player. Because there are people who, today I saw one where somebody was like, you know, we win that series of Zion's playing, right? You don't know.
No,
everything
and I remember
different.
What we said, some of us said in our chat, that we would have thought that the Pelicans might have played worse had he shown up, right? Had they played him 3 minutes here and there, right?
It took the Suns just a half to figure out how to use Booker again, and he was gone for a couple of games.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
He was it awful took them a half. Five until he made that shot. Or six, excuse me. Six, yeah.
So, I mean, and that's a guy who they've all year and had just missed a couple of games in a series where you're playing the same team, and it was difficult. So you're going to take a guy who hasn't played a minute and throw him into that at NBA speed? Okay. All right. Okay. Against a team as smart as the Suns? Yeah, that would have made a lot of sense. It would have been real fair. I just think nobody would have won in that situation. Nobody wins.
No, and that's where we have to applaud, right, the Pelicans for making that decision.
Yeah. I think they made the wise decision on that end, and it wasn't short-sighted. And ultimately, again, I think the playoff series, for anybody to view it as not as – yeah, you want to win. And they had a chance to win. Yeah, they did. You can look at two games in particular and say, yeah, they could have won those games. But ultimately, I'm not sad. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not like – the Pelicans didn't embarrass you. And you, what you saw, you should be encouraged by. Like, you should – it doesn't look like a flash in the pan game.
Punch in the mouth. They looked horrible, right? And there was a 6-point game in the second half. That said everything you needed to know.
They got there on fight, like that, literally. Like they were not smart. Like I'm saying, experienced enough. They weren't ready, but they were ready to fight.
And this is why this gives us hope, right? Let's lead to, I guess, transition into something else here. Because we're not trying to bury him. For those people that think we're trying to bury him for the way they play, definitely not doing that.
Hell no. Hell no. Like, I think that was really, and this will be, the last transition I get you guys' thoughts on this really quickly. But I thought that was as close as the city, the team, and the moment were since that, you know, that Chris Paul, Crescent City Connection group, because that was generally a group, you know, again, that you felt like they were real. This feels real in that sense. 2015 didn't feel real. 2018 didn't feel real.
It did to some extent. I'll disagree with you there, but yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
David, they rode such a hot stretch in those playoffs.
You didn't feel
beat up
like
on the Portland Trailblazers or make it a series, right? When everybody said they were going to get swept or whatever.
Well, we thought they were going to beat Portland.
I said they were going to come close to sweeping them, and they ended up doing it. So, yeah, I agree.
I mean, but the thing was that it was so fragile because you didn't know if they were going to keep that team together. You know what I mean? It was still a question mark on that team of whether or not it was going to be together.
And let's be real. I mean, it took what? Rondo behind the scenes because he had that, I don't want to call a tryst or whatever with Anthony Davis. They were out. You know, it felt like before that series was over, we learned after the fact, right? They were doomed to not continue on what we saw, right? Yeah.
Right. So this seems real. This seems tangible and sustainable. The word that David Griffin said, sustainable success, this feels like, at least for the foreseeable future, you can be successful with this core group. So changes still need to be made. So let's review the players themselves. Let's start with the rookie class. Fish, I will let you have this one because I think this is you would love to have this one. So Fish, your summary of the performance of the rookie class, give me your best three sentences on each one of them.
Herb Jones, elite defender, potential generational defender. Like, he might be one of the best wing defenders of this generation. Jose Alvarado, he's got that dog in him, and that's all that matters. Trey Murphy, potential, man. There's so much there that we haven't seen. And the thing is that he has the mindset to achieve it. And like, he already has the mindset there, and the shot's already there, and the athleticism's there. He's just got to put those pieces together. It's going to be incredible.
Ali, you want to give any feedback on any of those?
Yeah, I mean, it's the rookies, without a doubt, on their showing. Everybody saw the numbers, the stats, whatever, the memes. They played so many minutes, right? Unheard of for a team that's in the playoffs. But the numbers backed it up. We knew this from the eye test on what they can bring to the court, and Fish just laid it out. But the numbers said they were, especially Herb and Jose, amongst the best rookies in the class. and they just continued to show it in the playoffs. And then, of course, Trey showed up as well, especially if you count the play-in tournament. So on the biggest stage, and Fish loves to say they weren't afraid, but I'm going to say it's even better than that. To me, I've been telling people on radio shows, you name it, that they look like vets, right? They weren't out there. Not that I would say that there was any hint of worrying about their approach to the game, right, in terms of how aggressive should I be, right? When we talk about fear, it's the fact that they just filled their roles to a T, and they just did it even that much better in the playoffs, right, in all these important games. And when I say playoffs, I include the play-in tournament. Herb Jones continued to be a monster defensively. Trey Murphy, yeah, his shot didn't go down like you want to in the playoffs, but, man, they don't even make the playoffs if he doesn't do what he does in the play-in tournament, especially against the Clippers. And then, of course, Jose, the ability to be able to frustrate the best, one of the best point guards that have ever played the game to the degree that he did, and they did all this as rookies. It's almost laughable to how well they played as you know, as a group, but just individually. It's just, they deserve to be lauded over and over again.
It's certainly the best rookie class in franchise history, and I think it's one of the five or six of the last 20 years. When you look up and down the results, and just not, I'm not talking about, you know, somebody's going to point and say, well, this player got drafted and they were rookie of the year. Well, yeah, I get you. I understand. I'm talking about as a group of getting value for what you got out of the picks that you got, one being an undrafted free agent. Not, it's not like they had two first rounders and a high second round. This is an undrafted free agent. This is
so
a guy
huge,
who slipped.
My God. Yeah.
And then you talk about Trey, who slipped in a lot of people's minds to where he was.
Yeah,
a lot of
great comparison.
Trey
the Pelicans,
was supposed to go higher.
David Griffin tried to hit this home run in his first year, right?
Drafting, right.
Not only Zion, but trading up to have, I'm going to take a stab on Jackson Hayes and Nikhil Alexander Walker, and of course, Dede in the second round. And look how that panned out. And that never pans out for any team. It's not just that he failed. This just doesn't work the way it does. And yet, for them to do it the way they did in that sequence in this last draft class, it's unbelievable. We've never seen anything like it.
Just keep on swinging, man. That was my biggest thing even before, like when we were talking about the AD trade, man. Have draft picks and just keep swinging. Understand you're going to miss, but man, when you hit, it's awesome. It's amazing.
I think they changed the strategy, though.
They're drafting because, different kinds of players.
They drafted players who had been through shit.
Yeah, I mean, they're drafting older guys.
They didn't get
the guys that can carry that talent over. I mean, it's that combination that's so rare, right? Because it's easy to say four-year guys, right? Look how many guys have been overlooked. But how many guys have not lived up to expectations on this level? And I know just from following University of Cincinnati, Pete Michael, he came out with Kenyon Martin when he was the best rookie back in 2000. And Pete Michael was thought to be this heady, great guy. He couldn't get a job in the NBA. And yet, look at what these couple of rookies did, right? In Alvarado and Herb Jones. You have to – I think it was a combination of luck, talent, and all the above, but they did. They hit it out of the park. It's something we'll probably never see again from any team in the league, even though they're going to try and copy it.
Yeah, it's just that it's crazy value. And it's not like that – and you have to keep it in reference because, you could go into the 70s and find people who got drafted in the 17th round. And, yes, the NBA draft used to be that long. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, and you could say, dang, they got a Hall of Famer that late. Yeah, it was much different time. So, but I think in the last 20 years of this type of draft, with the lottery being weighted the way it is, to get three players who you were willing to give major minutes in the postseason to and not worry.
Yeah, but I got to say the Fish, because we have been following like all these seniors and these rookies coming out. Of how much we want him on the team. For instance, me, I want a LeVert. Fish, how much you want a Brogdon? So we've always followed these guys, always had a keen eye for them. And yet for the Pelicans to be able to nail two of them.
We asked for that.
Incredible.
We've always asked for some older players because especially I thought, and I think you guys thought it the same thing, was that when Zion came in, he didn't need more young guys around him. Mm-hmm. Like, they were all young. So why would you bring in more young guys to surround your young
and
star?
And here's the thing that audience, I hope, understands. What the hell is the difference between a 21 and 23, 24-year-old out there? Let's be real.
The difference is that if you draft the young kid, you hope by the time he gets to his second contract,
he can actually produce. And when you draft the 22 or 23 year old, actually on the back half of that rookie contract, you're going to get real NBA production. And then the second contract's going to be, you know, their prime. And
exactly.
So when you're swinging, you're swinging for the youth undervalued guys.
Fish, right?
Yeah.
I think the NBA is not a league where guys want to stay anywhere for 10 years anymore.
Exactly.
So you're drafted
for a dream if you're drafted for a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
And, so unless he's like
the best floor if you've got a team that's trying to win. All right. So the rookie class, again, phenomenal. The Pelicans do have, of course, the
It's part of the lottery foundation. Let's face it. Behind B.I., C.J., and Zion, the next three things, guys, excuse me, you're going to list are the three rookies, right?
Yeah, even Herb and Trey.
It's for me.
Herb and Trey have the clearly have the higher ceiling than Jose. Jose, like his max is a little bit higher than this. You know what I mean? But you when you look at Herb and you look at Trey, you're hoping that their peak is potential All Star.
Yeah, you but here's my thing. The way they impacted winning already, and that's the biggest key when I talk
about... Oh, I'm saying – I agree with that. I'm just saying
yeah.
if you were
yeah,
asking
no, I just want to get that out there for people that they hear this. It's impacting winning, right? I don't care what you do. I don't care what stats they put up in a box score. If you impact winning and you do it to a great degree of success, that's the biggest key in everything.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes.
And our three rookies certainly did that.
That's why they were on the floor, is because those guys did it.
I mean, we could spend a podcast talking about each single guy early in the season when the team wasn't winning on what they were doing positively on the court, right? And for, of course, Trey, most of it happened in March when he finally got a consistent role. But for me, I won't forget Jose Alvarado, right? Soon after the C.J. McCollum trade, right after, they played the Miami Heat. The Pelicans looked like crap on the court. Jose Alvarado shined. I think he scored like 16, 17 points. He was great on both ends. And I remember after the game, every single Miami Heat player went up to make sure that they got to introduce themselves to him. And we were laughing, or social media, people were laughing about, please don't try and steal him away, right? I mean, that sticks out in my mind like anything else in this season.
They were the spirit. You know, they were the spirit. They were the ones who lifted the other guys because you couldn't help but be attached to that energy. You couldn't help. I mean, energy that presented itself in different ways. And that's the whole thing, is like Trey is much more of a kind of, you see that he smiles, he's cocky. Herb is cold, deadly. Jose is fired up. And it's like but it's all of them give you a different energy because they all were able to make spectacular plays their way. And they're completely different, but they are all have the same type of motor and the same desire to help you win and the same desire to get better. Those guys busted their ass. They did. They busted their ass and they got better every opportunity. They rarely made the same mistake twice. And that's all you can ask out of rookies. That's it.
Yep.
Let's talk about the guys who came over in the offseason. So we have Jonas. I think awesome. We would all give universal praise for Jonas. Ollie, I'll let you give your Jonas praise.
I said it like in the middle of the season, but my goodness, he was the first half MVP. When the team is struggling, and let's face it, when I say struggling, everybody remembers, losing games left and right. There's very few things to be hopeful for. Brandon Ingram was still kind of playing that old style of he was used to where he was trying to dominate possessions on his own, trying to figure things out to get the team to score, going 2-on-1, et cetera. And he was for at least the first 6 weeks. Jonas was a consistent double-double force. So without a doubt, this team, especially with Zion signed, they needed that consistent score in the post. And that's exactly what he provided. Steven Adams, if they had retained him and not gotten Jonas, there's no way we would be talking about the successes that they enjoyed, right, for three quarters of the season. There's just no way. And I'm glad that Memphis thinks that the team or the trade worked out, you know, half and half, 50-50, everybody won. I disagree. Look at the playoffs right now, but that's besides the point. Jonas, without a doubt, set a certain mentality within a group that it was necessary. right? I mean, we loved what Derek Favors did a couple of years ago, right? But he kind of just did all of his things on the court through his play, which was in such a quiet demeanor. That's where we learned with Jonas. He was the guy pushing it in practice. He's the guy taking guys out before games, after games, on off days, treating them to steak dinners, making sure that, you know, you're building this team mentality. And when you're playing the best ball on the team and you're doing that, I think that just shines, right? That speaks volumes. So Jonas, for me, wow. I mean, he was as, you know, indispensable of a part to this team for when you consider the entirety of the season as really anybody.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I mean, when Ingram was hurt, it was Jonas. It's just that important. He set the physical tone when there wasn't anybody else to do it. He rebounded his ass off. And for a while, again, for your center to be the best three-point shooter in the NBA for a good month and a half.
Yeah, remember? I forgot about that. You're right, David. Jesus. He was getting mentioned with the best three-point shooters, yeah, for a long time.
Like, people were joking about putting him in a three-point contest.
Right.
Because he was shooting him that way. Shooting over 40% at some point. It's crazy.
Yeah, he shot, like, over 50% in November, and I won't forget that game against the Clippers, right? No, none of us will forget that. What did he make, seven or eight threes, right?
Yeah, it's just nuts. It's just nuts. He made, like, his first seven in a row.
Against the Clippers, seven straight.
Yep.
And then he missed, and that miss was like rimmed out. But he was just phenomenal this year, and so now we have to go to the other end, because then you got the Bulls package, which ended up being Thomas Satoransky, who was a piece that helped you get CJ McCollum and Larry Nance and Tony Snell. You had Garrett Temple, who became ultimately an assistant coach in waiting. I don't know, but not a player. And then, of course, then you have Devontae Graham, who is the extension of that you gave up a first round pick for, but by the playoffs was unplayable. Fish, the reviews ultimately on what the Pelicans got back for Lonzo Ball.
It's sad that the best piece of that, you would say, is Satoransky, because his expiring contract ended up being the salary filler you needed to get CJ.
You can't say that. Come on.
No.
You know that Garrett Temple didn't provide positive value, but Herb, all those rookies reaching out and pointing out what he did for them on the court and off of it. I think that's huge.
So Devontae did have two game winners. And let's not forget that. While he still wasn't necessarily great prior to CJ's arrival, he didn't shoot terribly well. Yeah. He was serviceable for a long time, and it really the biggest issue with Devontae is the fact that he doesn't fit with CJ, and he doesn't fit with Jose. And so it's kind of like the trade deadline made his presence on the roster unneeded. But let's not forget that, you know, for the first 50, 60 games of the season, he was decent. He wasn't great. Garrett Temple, I look forward to hearing about his retirement and becoming the most highly paid assistant coach in the NBA for a season. Satoransky is looking good again, because apparently he can only play well in a Washington Wizards uniform. So, I mean we'll eventually, like another pod, we'll talk about trades and stuff we're looking for, and Devontae Graham will feature heavily in that. But let's not forget, you know, that he was a key piece of what got the Pelicans to a point that they were close enough that the front office was able to pull the trigger for the CJ and Larry Nance trade, which changed the outlook of this franchise substantially.
Mm-hmm. You know, ultimately, you have to find the positives, because there are things that you have to come out of this. But in the math of it, the Pelicans didn't get what they should have gotten for the deal.
Yeah, I think so that, you say that they were lucky with how things fell afterwards?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Because it's if again, things had to work a certain way, the league had to go a certain way, injuries had to happen around for the Pelicans to be able to hang in to that point, and Portland had to implode to the point where they were willing to sell everybody for nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think a lot of things had to happen. That's really fortunate for the Pelicans that mm-hmm. are independent of the fact that for the third straight year in his career, Devontae Graham put up worse shooting numbers than the year before. From every level, from 2-point, from 3-point.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree. After December, he was a train wreck. I mean, we
and then he couldn't defend. And that, so it's he wasn't a defender. He wasn't an initiator. His shot was off. And it was streaky when it was on. And what he was giving up defensively wasn't counteracting what he was doing offensively when he was good.
Yeah,
so ultimately, it was just a bad deal for the Pelicans that worked out. It worked out. I think we need to get the biggest sections for these two. Let's get CJ out of the way because I think B.I. needs to get his own separate time. So for CJ, Fish, I'll let you take the lead on CJ and just his contribution this year and his value.
Man, like so much, like Ali had mentioned, you know, Garrett Temple and what he's done off the court. And Garrett Temple is, you know, incredibly valuable internally to the development of the team and the rookies and things like that. CJ is incredibly valuable externally, outside of the organization, how the organization is perceived by media, by other players, et cetera. Mm-hmm. With that title of, you know, president of the basketball operations, what he did with, you know, his comments with Zion and then kind of how that process flowed from there, from at the All-Star break until kind of where it ended up here at the exit interviews, where Zion's saying that he can't wait to sign the extension. Like that's a story arc right there about what, of kind of how CJ set the wheels in motion at the beginning and everybody freaks out about it. And then at the end, you know, he's achieved the result. He's playing chess, not checkers. And then on the court, I think there's been undue focus on his struggles on the court against Phoenix. He had the runner up, for the defensive player of the year, shadowing him essentially at all times.
Thank you, Fish. Yes.
And the Pelicans played, you know, two elimination games before that where he was very good. Phoenix wore him down a little bit. He got a little tired, but I mean, let's not forget.
He also battled through a flu, also maybe a little bit of an ankle issue. Yeah.
But the 30 games before it in the regular season when he was playing for the team, he was incredible. Lights out. Delivered, mm-hmm. exceeded all reasonable expectations in terms of his shooting, his shot creation, his creation for others. Mm-hmm.
Even his defense, right?
His defense.
I thought his defense was better than I ever thought it could be.
His defense
is willing. It's willing. And that's the biggest part is he was willing.
Yeah. The thing is that
weak side, he was in the right position every time. So he came up with steals, you name it.
He's smart. So he's in the right spot. And I guess we kind of saw why he kind of maybe wanted to get away from Damian Lillard whenever he was playing with Jose or whenever he was the only guard on the floor surrounded by Herb and B.I. When he's the only small defender that you can chase after, you can reasonably hide that guy. You can't hide it when it's two guys, which is why him and Devontae work so poorly with each other. But you know, with just him out there and you can, you know, give Herb these assignments and he did fine in the times when they matched him up with Chris Paul too. So you just can't have two minuses up there at the top at the point of attack. And hopefully that's what the Pelicans front office has learned, but then just everything offensively that he gives, he gets a lot more rebounds than you would expect. He contributes there.
The only thing is, I don't know if he needs to get in the lab with Vincent or whatever, but something's weird about his free throw shooting because it does not track with all the rest of his shooting. he had mentioned that.
Yeah, but this was the only year he's done it in, right? Yeah. Outside of his rookie year or something like that.
So, I mean, I hope.
And it was
like,
happening in Portland, too. That's when he came over.
Yeah.
Let's not get too deep in the weeds, guys.
Yeah, not going to get too deep in the weeds. I mean, I hope his home search goes well. He'd mentioned that on the pod. I think he's going to be a draw.
And isn't that great? Yes. Larry Nance. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, but the on-the-court stuff was great. And I think projecting forward, he'll have more opportunity to play off the ball, especially when, you know, Zion is playing. And they'll have plenty of time to integrate him with, you know, the preseason workouts and preseason games and stuff. And there'll be some growing pains at the beginning. Let's not kid ourselves here. So that maybe he can be fresher towards the end of the season. And maybe he was a little, you know, burning the candle at the end. So, but he was tremendous. And we cannot diminish what he has done for the entire organization from an outside perspective. How he is elevated. Yep.
First time it's ever happened like that in 20 years.
Yep.
I'm going to lead with on BI, and I'm going to let Ollie finish on BI. Because my thing for BI is pretty succinct. I remember, you know, Ollie and I last season when BI, it's just the thing that I'll never forget. It's just that moment when BI said, you know, I'm going to kill everybody in front of me. And I was so excited in that moment. Like, genuinely. Oh, you remember?
Yep, I asked a question. I know. I remember.
And I was like, that I've been waiting to hear that, since he got here. That was the moment. And then I was tough on him. I was tough on B.I. because he would have those bad fourth quarters. He would have those struggles offensively. And we didn't know all the things that were going on. But I was just looking at, you know, it wasn't good for all the reasons that it wasn't, that we all know now. It wasn't good. This year, it started again that way. It was tough for him in the second half of games for a number of reasons. Again, it's not all him. But he found that place somewhere along the line of how to make that team better when statistically his season looks similar to the other two. And I said it before and I'll say it again. He went from statistical all-star to actual star. Like, he's a guy that can make a team better because he's on it and do it at a high level, not as a role player, do it at a high level as a leading player. Do I know if he's still a one? I don't know yet. He's still growing. But I've seen growth in Brandon Ingram over the past season that I had not seen before. I saw a guy more willing to play defense, a guy willing to be more physical as a rebounder, and as a ball handler. I saw a guy who knew how to get to his spots, who was efficient with how he took care of his shooting. And when he did struggle with a three, he just said, okay, I'm not going to waste my time taking threes. I'm going to kill him with twos. And he did that. So I thought his game got better. He was more intelligent. And ultimately, the biggest thing was that he took ownership of that team. And he was willing to accept the fact that for them to win, he needed to play well. And he understood that. And he made sure that other guys played well, too. Ollie?
Yeah. I mean, it's indescribable, honestly, on how much he improved, even though, like you just said, I mean, what, last three seasons for New Orleans, his scoring average is within a point. A lot of stats, right? Rebounds, assists, blah, blah, blah. And so people think, okay, he's still that same guy. Not even close. He started off this year playing that same mentality, as you said, David, looking to try and do it on his own, but doing it in a way that he wasn't going to be successful, right? And then, this is where I credit Willie Green. I think Willie made him understand that in order for the team to win, which is something I think he's always wanted, on top of, right, being the guy to do it, is the fact that he found that success within that team concept. So that means running off a couple of picks. That means not dominating a possession, right? Dribbling the basketball, air out of the basketball, and still getting to your favorite spots, but with so much less effort and having and being in a more premium position to score, right, to be more successful. And he did it. And here's the best thing. I looked at his on-off court numbers. In the first month or two, negatives, right? Massive negatives in October. By March, it was like plus 14. You know, in the April, it slipped to plus 7 because of a couple of poor games to finish out the regular season. But overall, it was just tremendous on how much better the team was when he was on the court. And you could see it in his decision-making. And I noticed it in the playoffs more than anything. He was on such fire. I wouldn't have blamed him for trying to shoot every single basketball, right, during that stretch where, what, he had those games 2 through 4, over 30 points per game. It seemed like he couldn't miss. But yet within those games, he was reversing the ball. That's where Willie Green said, you know, I basically threw the playbook out. I let Brandon run things. And Brandon was seeing things out there, kind of like what I think CJ has been doing now for several years. But B.I. hit that level of where the team was going to have its most success, and he let it happen. And that's the biggest key. That's what your superstar has to do. And that's why I had no shame in saying that Brandon Ingram looks like a superstar. And people can laugh at it because he's not averaging that LeBron line or something like that, but he legitimately looked like that guy. I mean, when it came time for the Pelicans to score, or when they needed to have somebody change the momentum of the game, and I won't forget a few game threes, or excuse me, third quarters, where he came out of halftime and just set the tone. I mean, that's what your stud, one of the best players in the league, needs to do, and he did. So without a doubt, I think he reached that level, but more so he began to believe in himself and the team to where it's cemented, right? Now looking forward, I don't think there's any chance of regression, and he's going to be going into his age 25 year feeling kind of like the player probably he always thought he was in his mind, but now he's got the successes built on it. Now he's surrounded by the right teammates, the right coach. He's in such a comfortable situation, and that's key. People don't talk about it.
He's as healthy as he's going into an offseason in a while.
Down as all hell. You're not going to succeed if you're in just a shitty situation. That's why some teams like the Sacramento Kings just flounder, Wizards forever, the Lakers when they didn't have LeBron. Just name it. It happens, right? Because it takes more than just one guy to win games consistently over 82 games. And I think B.I. has found that level. And, man, I'll tell you what. You can't name me 19 better guys. He is without a doubt, a top 20 NBA player right now to me, and probably higher than that. I haven't really gone over it yet. I don't know if you guys have, but yeah, he's a top 20 guy because he's given you that effort everywhere in the court.
I think he's got to get a little bit more, just a little bit more, a little bit more to get top 20.
Where, David? Where?
It's the defense to where you feel like, again, that to me, that's what separates everybody is that yeah. I have to.
Are you looking at game one? I'm just curious. Are you looking at game one where Booker just torched them, right? And where?
No, I just think that there are times. There's just times still where I think he's still. I thought he played
doesn't make
much
a difference
better
defensively if it's a good offensive player. I agree with you. That's why I was asking.
Yeah. So I think that's just the difference. It's if he becomes a guy that you legitimately can fear a little bit on defense.
Do you think he can? That's the biggest question. Do you think he can?
I think he has all the physical tools to do so. With that wingspan, as long as the matchups, and I think because of what you have in Herb Jones, because of what you have in Trey, because you have Najee, and you have these flexible, multi-positional defenders, B.I. is not going to be asked a lot of times to defend anyone one-on-one. But if he can be an elite team defender to where, you know, whatever, he always understands his switch. He always understands when to stay. He understands when to fight over the screen, to go under the screen. If he's that guy, he doesn't have to be the greatest individual defender in the NBA. But if I think he needs to become as good a team defender as he possibly can be.
Fish, you got anything to add?
You guys hit it on the head, man. I'm trying not to overtalk today.
Yeah, one thing I want to say that I noticed with B.I., after Josh Hart got traded, I noticed B.I. doing such a much better job on the interior defensively. And that's why I said I loved and I preferred him being on bigger wings when he could just use his length. And he made a big difference. Go look at his numbers on contested shots inside the lane. They jumped by double after the Josh Hart trade and the effectiveness. So I think B.I. found something where he can excel in. Let's face it, he's not going to be able to guard those 6'2" and shorter guys or something like that on perimeter. even with Booker and all his moves, I think he doesn't have the hips, right? The agility to move and stay with them. But what he can do is use that length. And when you put him on guys that are especially at the 3 and 4, I think that's his bread and butter. So going forward, Herb Jones being able to go ones and twos, huge. CJ McCollum, you leave him there. I think, honestly, B.I. is going to be a much better defender just by where and who he's going to be asked to guard.
Yeah. He does not have to be an elite one-on-one defender. He's not going to ever be tasked to be given the hardest guy. That's Herb's job. And Herb is going to get the most difficult score no matter what.
Grab, every time I think about Herb, I think about your tweet. Thank God for Herb or whatever you posted. Is it still pinned, right? You pinned something like that.
And may Herb Jones keep you and protect you to 2022. So that's been the one for the year. And also, I've said Herb Jones is one of the three best defensive players I've seen as a rookie. And that's for me. And people can say Gary Payton, and I'm not going to fight you over Gary Payton. Who am I? I'm not an asshole. I'm just saying that if you ask me, to watch what Herb was tasked to do, he's up there with the people that I've seen. And I saw Dennis Rodman play defense as a rookie, and it was crazy and bananas. And I never saw anybody expend that much energy and not be tired. And Tim, who I watched play 4 years in college, and then as soon as he came to the NBA, he was already first team all NBA defensively. Like it just he's the last rookie to make all NBA as a first team as a rookie. So it's for me to say Herb is in that group, and you guys know I've loved Herb from day one. That's to me, that's as good as I can give it to Herb Jones. And I also believe he's more than just the same way we said with Trey. Trey was more than just 3 and D. Herb is more than just the defensive wizard. Like they can do more, and they will do more as their careers go on. But to wrap, the last group we have not dealt with is the bigs. So you have our favorite big, Larry Nance Jr. You have our the most likable big in Billy Hernan Gomez. And then you have our most controversial big, and maybe the most controversial Pelicans player, the most lightning rod of all, Jackson Hayes. Ollie, I will let you – we don't need to say that to Billy. Billy, thanks. Great effort. I'm serious. Perk start, the number of double-doubles Billy Hernan Gomez gives you. It's just a liability against too many teams. But I think we all like Billy, and at his value, he's fine at what he does, right?
Good. Yes. He's always ready, stays ready, world champion.
So I'm going to position this as, and you guys are going to be on these two sides here. Jackson and Nash, Jackson and Nance, as one is exactly what you wanted in a big, and the other as everything that you think that you want in a big, but it's not going to help you win a championship. That's my position. I will let you guys tear that apart or agree with it. Fish, you may have the floor first.
Man, you and I come from the same place on this one, so it's hard for me to disagree on that. I love the idea of Jackson Hayes. I love the practice of Jackson Hayes. I hope that the Pelicans are not the team that pays him his second contract, because I don't think it makes any sense. I would much rather hear that the Pelicans extend Larry Nance this summer than extend.
Why doesn't it make sense, Fish? Because I know listeners are going to be listening saying, look, we saw the glimpses. Why doesn't it make sense? Because if not, I'll get into it. But go ahead.
Well, it doesn't make sense really for this biggest thing is that he can't play five. Like you cannot let Jackson Hayes, at no point can you survive with Jackson Hayes out there as your only big. Because we've seen that when he's out there without a Larry Nance or a Jonas Valanciunas or even a Billy Hernan Gomez to protect him, the rebounding goes to complete shit. And you can't finish possessions if you can't grab the rebound. And a lot of that's his tendency to try to block everything and jumps out of position and just he's a deer in the headlights defensively. He's a 6'11" wing, essentially, that doesn't really dribble and doesn't really shoot a whole bunch. And maybe if you're on a team that is built to maximize that guy. If the Pelicans didn't have Larry and Jonas, it'd make a lot of sense. But it doesn't, because the Pelicans do have Larry and Jonas, and hopefully they're going to have them for a little while here. So I just, the biggest thing that kind of bumps into it for Jackson is the fact that his extension would hit the same time that a hypothetical Zion extension hits.
Hypothetical, nothing, it's happening. But.
So if, you know, if you're paying, like, what's his second contract look like? Number one.
That's a good question. Yeah.
And it's probably going to be something, you know, that's going to be eight figures. Like,
he's going to ask for a bigger role.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to ask for $15 million a year. What do you guys think? That's my guess.
Jackson, he believes. Look, this is the thing that gets me. And Ollie, you mentioned it too. In his exit interview, that was a lack of self-awareness of what he needs to do to get better. Because 90% of what he talked about,
like a guard and cementing those type of characteristics.
Yeah, all he talked about were offensive skills. He didn't talk about, I need to be a better screen setter. I need to be a better post defender. I need to be a better rebounder. I need to be a better shot blocker. I need to stay on the floor without fouling. All he's talking about is, I got to work on my footwork. I got to get my jumper going. I got to get my ball handling straight. No, you don't. I'm sorry. There are 4 20-point scorers on that team already, and you could have 5 potentially. And you're talking about, you need to have better guard skills? Get the fuck out of here, Ollie.
Now I'm going to let Fish go, because Fish was going on with this.
I agree with you completely on that situation. He doesn't understand why he wasn't on the court. Because Larry Nance wasn't on the court because he had guard skills, or he could pass, or he was shooting threes. Larry Nance was on the court because he could rebound, because he could be in the right spot, because... I mean, even if Chris Paul drains the jumper over him, Larry Nance is making him shoot it over him. Like, that's what good defense looks like. Good defense a lot of the time looks like you challenge the shot and the guy shoots over you and he makes it or misses it, but you did your job because you were there in the spot that you're supposed to be with your hands up, making the shot difficult. And that's something that you can't depend on Jackson Hayes to do.
How many extra possessions did Larry Nance give the Pelicans?
From tap
in
out?
In limited minutes.
Yeah, just how many times does he redirect tap out? Just battle. You have to box out Larry Nance, right? Like, and he's going to box you out on the other end. And he's not going to get himself out of position to finish the defensive possession chasing the highlight. And Jackson Hayes is going to chase the highlight. And when you chase the highlight, sometimes you're going to get the highlight. But a lot of the times you're just not going to be in position, and the other team is going to get the offensive rebound and they're going to get a putback. And it won't be a highlight, but it'll be 2 points for the other team. And that's the thing that you need to limit. 2 points for the other team. No, like, just go get the rebound.
Don't, and I think the maturity is still a big question too.
But I mean, I'm not saying that Jackson Hayes doesn't have upside, or he doesn't have, you know, a path to being a very successful NBA player. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the Pelicans are in a position right now. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at CJ, B.I., Herb, Zion, Jonas, Jose, Trey, Najee, Nance, I just listed 9 guys. That's 9 dudes. They're all ready to play.
Rookie that's coming next year.
Where does Jackson Hayes fit in that? And then, I mean, we'll talk about it more, but what's the history of the Pelicans taking a restricted free agent, pending strict restricted free agent, into another season and then actually getting value for them? We saw what happened. We talked about it. Thomas Satoransky, Garrett Temple, you know, and some mythical second round pick in I don't know how many years. Like, that's what happens when you say, oh, we'll just roll with it and we'll see what happens. Because nobody's trading for him, you know, if you wait until the deadline or something like that. When's he going to play? Like, in case of injury? In case of injury, you probably want somebody better than Jackson Hayes. Somebody that's going to go out there and do their job. So that's where I'm at with Jackson Hayes. And my love of Larry Nance is endless and boundless.
Yeah, even Larry knows.
Yes, he does.
Ollie is. I mean, honestly, they're just, even if you like what Jackson Hayes does, even if you're in that thing, it's hard to justify where his role is and where his minutes would come from next year in the rotation.
Easily. He has spent 3,500 minutes in the NBA, and we know the first year was supposed to be his redshirt type of season, but he got pressed into action. But here's the point. If you look at his just per 36 numbers, anything, they're identical from his rookie season to just this past season. And I'm sorry, that's just not good enough. We saw better glimpses, of course, especially after he became a starter. But for me, it was right around the trade deadline. But look, if you can't show any consistency anywhere in the court for a team that's ready to win, and when you've got a second contract approaching, I'm sorry, it's just not good money management for a team that's on the rise, that is literally on the verge of being a championship contender, to sink their teeth into on that, to me, it's the smallest of odds of him succeeding. So no, it doesn't make any sense from any angle for the Pelicans to take that chance. So I don't know how all you guys that, I see the explosiveness. I see a guy that, you know, just finished his age 21 season. And that's when JaVale McGee entered the NBA, was at age 21, who didn't, of course, shine at first and made so many mistakes with the Wizards and such, that developed, and he developed a nice role player. But my goodness, are you going to go hang on to this guy for 6, 7, 8 years and pay him the money that he's probably going to get with any other team?
But JaVale at least was showing rebounding instincts. JaVale was at least showing shot blocking instincts. Right?
We said this. There's three stars on this team. There's rookies that fulfill their role, especially defensively. So Jackson needs to play a certain role. And yet, you just mentioned it, David, on his exit interview. He doesn't seem to have a full grasp of what he needs to do to make this team better for him to shine at the same time. So
he's worried about him shining. And look, I get that. He's worried about him shining and, you know, doing all those things. And that's why I'm going to keep on pounding the drum that, hey, like, trade him to someplace like Indiana where he can be a power forward. And like, there's a big there that he blocks it.
If Zion's going to be a guy and Jackson's best position is a four, what the hell does it make any sense to pay him $15 million or whatever to play 14 minutes a game?
No, you just give all those monies, those minutes to Larry. Like, you only, you want to have four or five bigs that you're not afraid to play, but you really only need three bigs to log minutes, especially when you can say, well, Brandon Ingram can log some power forward. Trey Murphy can log some power forward. Najee Marshall can log some power forward. Larry Nance can log some power forward. Zion's going to play all his minutes at power forward. Like, what are we doing here? Where is the place for Jackson Hayes? It's not here.
Yeah, I want people to understand that we did not like the way Jackson Hayes began the season, right? He was terrible. He looked like the rookie that we saw, right? He didn't do anything on the court. He didn't deserve minutes, and rightfully so, he lost his position. But then he improved, started showing some glimpses. But again, long picture, it doesn't make any sense, and that's what we're all saying.
And he regressed again, though, towards the end of the season. He regressed again.
He was a token starter.
He wasn't even putting up double figures in points. He went a good 2 weeks where, especially playing up to the end of the play-in games, he was worthless in the play-in games.
Yep. And then the playoffs, it was just like
they weren't guarding him.
Token games. Yeah.
Guarding him. It was bad. It's just, you can't wait. The Pelicans' window is open now. You have a chance next season, I believe, for this to be a top four seed in the West.
And that would be fine if he was a rookie that has still X amount of years on his rookie contract, but he doesn't. He's got one. If you don't move him now, which I know Fish is going to get into, boy, that window closes on what you can get back for him.
Well, we can talk about transactions.
Yeah, we'll do trades another time. This is just wrapping the season. So let's talk about Willie.
Nobody's coaching the NBA.
He stays ready so he doesn't have to get ready, man. Like, whenever he was called upon, he was in there. We know his weaknesses defensively, but, I mean, even with his weaknesses that he has defensively, you know what? He's going to be in kind of the right position, and he's going to go crash the glass at least. When he had the log minutes, it was never a disaster.
And when you're talking about a guy who's playing on roughly the minimum as a 7-footer, that's wonderful. That's way more than you expect. And then combined with that, he's tremendous in the locker room and everybody loves him. And that's the kind of guy that you just keep around and you just keep on paying him a minimum contract for as long as he'll stay here.
He's no hassle. Like, he's no hassle.
I just got to reprimand Grubb, because when you said Willie, I thought of Willie Green. It's Billy Hernan Gomez. All right. That's the difference.
My bad. I'll let you, because Fish will go on forever.
I agree with
Nance.
Everything Fish said, by the way, about Billy.
If I let Fish go on Nance, we'll never get off the pot.
Yep.
So I'm just going to let you give a quick summary on what Larry Nance brought to the table for this team. And it was really a short amount of time. We didn't get a ton of games, but in that time, he made a big impact.
He had what, like not even 10 games in a regular season. And then, of course, the play-in, playoffs. So no continuity, no really understanding chemistry with his teammates. But we saw his IQ, his hustle, his versatility. And it, for me, it's just that undying tenacity that I equate with Josh Hart. That's why I talked about him in that same mold when the Pelicans, as soon as they landed him for Josh Hart, that they're not going to lose that on the court when he's out there, even though it's going to come at a different position. And he proved it to be true. This guy, he's not going to make every bucket for it, just like Josh, right? People lamented him not having those good shooting games, not making the threes. But it's what he does outside of it. You just can't put a price on it because the stats aren't there to back it up. But he is so invaluable. So he can make a pass. He can guard three positions. He can rebound the heck out of it. And if you're going to go small ball, he's going to punish you, just like he did in that Clippers playing game, right, where he owned the glass and that middle.
And so, he can shoot the three.
A little bit.
If you give him like two or three open shots from three, he's going to make one or two of them. So, yeah. He'll stretch out the floor to where if you're going to leave him wide open, he's going to burn you on a couple of possessions. And that's what you love. And look, the biggest thing for me, though, is the fact that he's another disruptor. I think that's where the Pelicans, until they get that massive, great, if they ever do, right, five that can play like Bam Adebayo or some of these great centers, right, that can change the game with their defensive ability. Nance is the next best thing for you because he's adding to what Jose – Herb, and even I think Trey is going to give you in time, of course, is creating those turnovers, right? Whether it's with a block or with a steal. So I love Nance. I love everything about him. I hope he retires here. I think he does too, right? You guys caught what he said in the exit interviews, right? Playing for so many different coaches, so many different teams. He wants to settle down somewhere, and he loves New Orleans. He loves his team. He loves the city. I hope Griff gets it done.
I'm not going to do
– Oh, hold on. Let me – I just want to one thing.
Yeah, you got to let Fish have a say on that.
All right, be careful.
Okay. So,
you're on your best behavior.
The play-in and then the playoffs. One of the biggest things that jumped out at me on Larry Nance, that motherfucker set screens.
Oh, like, yes, I missed that, yes.
He's going to get a piece of somebody. He's going to get, you know, CJ or B.I., an opening. He's actually going to force a switch. It's not going to be a soft switch. Like, he's going to get a piece of the defender.
We were waiting for someone.
And then if two guys collapse, he's open.
Yeah. And then the thing is that he can play the game off the short roll, but he sets a dang screen. Jonas sets screens, but the thing is that Jonas kind of just lumbers after it. Larry sets a screen and like he can cause havoc on the bottom end of that. So, man.
In a number of ways. He can dive, he can go for a lob, he can peel out for three, he can – a lot of things.
Yeah, so I just wanted to chip that in because Ollie hadn't covered that.
Yeah.
Fish, that's huge. That is really huge in today's game, you're right. And I think for the way the Pels want to play.
We'll leave Kyra with an incomplete, and we'll leave Tony Snow with an incomplete. I don't think it's worth our time. And it's not to disrespect either of those guys. As we go into more of the future stuff in other pods, as we start talking about next season and projecting people's roles – we will absolutely address Kyra. We will absolutely be addressing what's going to happen with the roster. But for the purposes of this season, their roles just weren't big enough for them to be influential enough for us to break down what they did. I mean, we could say, yeah, Kyra showed flashes, but I think it's ultimately that. That's where we'd stop. He showed flashes.
Let's talk about Willie Green.
Yes, that's where I was. Let's wrap with Willie Green,
yeah.
Who had the unenviable task of coming into this team late, you know, having to wait until after the finals to get his job, not having his franchise player available for the entire season, come into a team that had some emotional issues that it needed to work out, it had some hard feelings in different places, and we all thought Willie was put in a rough spot, and he had an edict of essentially get to the playoffs or bust, and he somehow managed to get this team into the playoffs and represent itself the way it did. Fish, I'll let you go first, and then I'll let Ollie have the last word.
I mean, and I want to get your take too, Greg. By the way, go ahead, Fish.
I mean, we've dissected and discussed what Willie Green does with rotations and plays and things like that, man. And there's stuff that I love, like the Pelicans run stuff. Now they run complicated stuff. It's not just, hey, we're going to push the ball up the floor and we're going to have a couple drag screens and stuff's going to happen. No, the Pelicans have stuff. They have pet plays that they're going to go to over and over and over again. And they have, you know, three or four different options, depending on how you defend it, how we're going to attack out of that. Cause you can't defend everything. Right. And the Pelicans, and he does so much of that stuff with involving Jonas and CJ and BI in these same actions. And that's high level coaching, because he's making the game simple on them, because he's not calling a whole bunch of stuff. They just know, hey, we're going to get into this action. And then depending on what the defense gives us or what we can force the defense, what we can force upon the defense, this is how we're going to create shots out of that. That's high level stuff. But the other thing, the biggest thing is the fact that he's connected with this team in a way that turned them into a borderline top 10 defense, despite the fact that Devontae Graham does not have a very good reputation as a defender. CJ McCollum, same thing. Herb Jones, a freaking rookie. Brandon Ingram came into this season with a very poor, defensive reputation. Jonas Valanciunas, part of the reason why Memphis was trying to get off of him is the fact that, you know, he was getting eaten alive in drop coverage. But hey, he found a way to cobble all that together. And the biggest thing that you could depend on this team is, one, they were going to just play together. Two, they were going to play freaking defense. And three, they were going to crash the glass. And you know what? Those things, they don't matter if you're hot or cold or the other team's hot or cold. You can bring that every single night. And that's why the team was competitive every single night. And when we talk about the mentality and the team having like an attitude and this is who we are, this is what Pelicans basketball looks like, he established that. And we saw it grow and improve throughout the season. And that is why I'm so excited about next year, because the things that the Pelicans did isn't based on luck or on specific matchups or anything like that. The Pelicans are going to out-tough you. That's how we play basketball in New Orleans now. And Willie Green made that happen.
Yeah, I think that's where my principle of the 105 comes from. It's a number that feels like it's arbitrary, but it's not. It is a reflection of that mentality. When the Pelicans play teams hard and physical and still get out on the floor and run, that's what they do. I'm going to be brief, Ollie, because I want you to have the last word. I'm going to be brief on Willie. There are a lot of reasons that I am, really proud of Willie Green. I'm a Detroit native. Willie Green's a Detroit native. Willie Green's a guy that you watch and just say, look, he grinded for everything he got. And to watch as players, past and present in the NBA, to watch Allen Iverson, to watch Jamal Crawford, all these players come out and be like happy for Willie Green, it shows you how, the character of that man. And to see that, not only to be accompanied, he's not just a good guy that you want to root for. He is a good coach. Like Fish said, you see the tactical the strategy that he was able to implement with this team. This was an identity that he wanted to create. He was not shy about this from his opening press conference. This was the team he wanted to build.
He gives the credit to everyone else. But this is Willie Green's team.
Mm-hmm.
And the players understand that. And every one of them, you talk about Jose Alvarado saying, this man changed my life. And you have Herb Jones talking about, we fed off of his energy every day because he would not let us come to do stuff just to get through it. It was to get better. And when your guys are echoing what you say, it's like a parent in some ways, and I don't mean to do this to infantilize professional athletes. But what I'm saying is, if you have your staff or you have your coworkers or your team on the same page, they are repeating back what you have said because they believe it. They believe it. If you, no matter what it is, if people are repeating it, they believe it. They've heard it, they've internalized it, and they believe it.
Otherwise, they don't have friends, man. They got family.
But I mean, it's the mentality. Whether it's family to me, you know, that stuff comes from winning. When you really start winning. But what Willie established was trust first.
Mm-hmm.
That when they were bad, that he was not going to treat them like they were bad. You know what I mean? Like, he treated them like professionals. And he said, you're going to keep working and we're going to figure this out. But at no point did he allow that bad to creep into their mindset. It was always about the next game for Willie. And I think he did not allow that team to think about the last game very often. You know, and he has his shortcomings like any rookie coach would. But I remember when we were first doing – when Alvin was let go and we were looking at coaches and Willie was on that list then. And then I also look at a guy like Ime Udoka, who we also really liked and is at Boston and did a fantastic job with Boston this year. You know, there's something to be said for role players, for guys who understand how to communicate. And it's not just about the X's and the O's. It's about, can you get buy-in? And he got buy-in from the biggest guy, Brandon Ingram. And we'll see if he gets buy-in from he got buy-in from CJ McCollum to sell that. He got buy-in from all these guys to sell it. And now we just want to see, does it carry over to Zion Williamson? If it works with him, man, you have something really fucking special in New Orleans. Ollie?
Not at any point did the team ever stop believing in Willie, give him less than 100%, or did Willie stop believing in the results? Ime Udoka, I don't know if you guys remember, early in the season when Boston was floundering, there was talk of, can Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown work? I remember Ime going out there in front of reporters and kind of throwing the team under the bus once or twice. Willie never did it. And that was kind of Stan Van Gundy's downfall last season. He did that enough times where it pissed off too many players and it reverberated in that locker room. When you're going through what's kind of technically a first year because you're all together, especially under a coach for the first time, you can't have those moments and usually bounce back. Boston did, because let's face it, Tatum's a superstar. Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart.
I think Udoka threw them under the bus.
Right.
I think treated them differently. I think it's different situations. I think he was straight with them. Because he told Brown.
What I'm getting to, Willie Green was always genuine. Yeah. The honesty, the genuine guy who had an unyielding belief that said to us when the team was, nope. Everybody talks about the 1-12 start, the 3-16 start, but I remember a team in training camp and preseason that I didn't want to write about. They were that bad on the court. Yet he had this belief that they were going to turn it around, they were going to find themselves. And we thought that they had enough talent to where they should do it. But it's the fact that it's the way he approached, right, media sessions, his talks, and what we came to learn on how he approached his players. And that's the biggest key. It truly is the biggest key as a coach today. You've got to be able to communicate with your guys. You've got to be able to establish a relationship to where you've got, you know, where you can, you know, extract the best out of them on the court, put them in whatever situation you ask, because you think that's the way the team's going to succeed. And that, I feel, it hasn't been given enough credit, because I feel like Brandon Ingram, he's a guy that he's never had this type of coaching before, right? To where he has basically, you know, given up. I don't know what the right phrase is here.
The Pelicans were on the verge of losing Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, to where I'm not going to have the numbers, but it's going to lead to winning. And then it backed it up. Willie Green reached every single guy, as you guys have mentioned, on the court simply because of his past and the roles on the teams and whatever situation they were in. He was able to get the best out of them. And nothing shows to me more than the way the team performed in third quarters. They were the best third quarter team in the regular season, I want to say, especially I know outside of the 6 weeks. I'm not sure if it held up true for the whole season. I haven't looked at it, but I know once they got past that rough start, they were the best third quarter team.
I mean, they won 5 of the 6 against the Suns.
There you go. Yeah, that's very true. But I just know that it's a given, right? For all of us that have watched NBA for a long time, it's a given that good teams come out well in third quarters because they know what adjustments to make. They know that they have to play a certain way. You've got to come out with that tenacity, the right game plan, you name it. And I feel like all that was due this season because, let's face it, they had 11 guys, never been in the postseason, and they came out and they did it. They got the job done. So the overall record doesn't even remotely show what Willie Green accomplished in his first season. I don't care if they had even made the playoffs. I had already felt like this long before. And I remember there was an article posted by, who was it? Fish, who's the writer that used to be a Sacramento King writer, but now he's on a national stage. He does newsletters.
Mark Ziller. Stein?
Tom Ziller.
Nope. Yes, Ziller. He had a post, I want to say in December, top 13 coaches, right? Where he was trying to figure out who maybe should be the leading coach and candidate. In December, Willie Green wasn't on that list of 13 guys. And I remember because I had posted something where I was going to write an article, didn't get around to doing it, but I disagree with him vehemently. And it was because we saw that change within his team take place after that bad start to where they held it together, where we saw him getting the best out of his guys. And, you know, he wasn't given the credit for it because it started well back then. It wasn't because of the job he did over the last few months. It's the job he did over the entire season, keeping this group together, getting the best out of B.I., for him to change his ways that had become ingrained, right? Being a Laker, being under Alvin, especially under Stan. Stan really didn't get the most out of his top two guys, putting him in the right positions, I thought. And, of course, that, you know, translates on down through the rest of the roster. But Willie did it. And I know he had his mistakes. You guys already mentioned, we all know it, right? The rotations weren't always perfect. But I think for him, it was the bigger thing for this season to be a success was just to have that harmony, to do it as a group, to feel like you accomplished something. So that's why Devontae kept on getting thrown out there or whoever else, Derek Temple early in the season. But either way, it ended up being a very successful season because the Pelicans did make the playoffs because they got the best out of, namely one guy that didn't perform to the best of their abilities or show improvement. I can't. And that rarely ever happens on any team, let alone a playoff team, especially with the young guys. But you can say every single young guy improved on this team. So Willie Green, on no matter what aspect you look at, he got the best out of everybody and everything when the situation called for it, enough to where, as a rookie head coach, you couldn't have asked for anything more.
I mean, you know, we did just say Jackson and Devontae Graham did that.
Yeah, but there are games when Jackson's playing 7 minutes, right? 13 minutes at the most. And Devontae, those 4 minutes that he spent in a half and then he didn't see the second half, that to me just shows that, yeah, he's trying to tread that line, Grubb. I know, I get it. But I think he
did. I'm just saying, you said every young player got better.
And he did.
Jackson did not get better. Jackson did not get better. Jackson was the better this year.
I think Jackson did get better. He was unplayable at the start of the year. The whole bench.
But he does this every year.
Let's not make every question about Jackson.
Jackson still couldn't defend a simple pick and roll, understand anything out there on the court.
He's not, but he wasn't better at the end
of
the year.
But his last 3 months of the court, he was crashing the boards more. Yes, it was.
No, he wasn't. His rebounding numbers were poor.
The averages, yes, but the double digits when he played the games, right, where he hit double what? He had a couple double-doubles.
He had more double-doubles than Billy. Jackson had 4 double-doubles this year.
I know. That's my whole point because Jackson didn't get the minutes. No, but look, honestly, I think Jackson improved. He was a better player than he was in year one and two. I'm sorry you disagree with that, but I think that's true.
Oh, God, no. No. Oh,
really?
God, no. No.
Let's try to close up on a happy note, y'all.
No.
See, take it away from Jackson. Go someplace else with it.
Look, Jackson wasn't – look, David, talk to me about just a simple pick and roll. Last couple of years, Jackson was so lost on a pick and roll to where whatever his assignment was, whether on a switch or not, he was like three steps away from where he should have been. It wasn't that way this year. It wasn't.
Okay. Ollie, why would you do that?
I'm serious, Grub. Come on, man. Agree.
Man, no, man. No, I can't go with you. I can't ride with you on that, man. I'm sorry. It's the same guy every year. He gives you one fucking hot month, and y'all be like, Jackson got better. And it's the same thing. At the end of the year, it looks exactly the same. It looks exactly the same.
I'm not a Jackson believer.
The minutes are up, and the numbers are the same. The same.
Hey, the fact that Jackson said this was a great locker room to where the last couple of years was good, I don't know. That's enough for me because it's true.
All right. I think our final word on this season, I think, Ollie, you said.
We didn't even talk about Jose, goddammit.
We did the rookies.
But anyway.
We did the rookies.
We didn't highlight him enough, but anyways, that's okay. We didn't even talk about Najee.
Ollie, it's 90 minutes in. We can go deeper in other things.
I know.
You know, we had other
I'm weeks. Trying to be a pain in your ass right now.
90 minutes. You want to go?
We did a great job. Go ahead. Go finish. I'm sorry.
So I just say the final word on the season, I think, is that it's, you have to call it a successful season.
Yes.
They made the playoffs. They came from where they, you know, the depths, and they shouldn't have. And I think, like you said, ultimately the bigger thing is they have a culture, an identity, and a future. And those were the three things that were all in question a year ago. All three of those things were in question.
It's in question entering basically December, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
They turned it all around in the span of like 5 months, man. Five and a half months.
So, and that to
give incredible. You don't see it.
Legitimate, and I say this with all due respect to fans, to give it legitimate, not fan hope. Like legitimate, you know, every fan wants to believe in your team, and you do that every year. That's why you're a fan.
Yeah.
But like you have legitimate, like if somebody comes up to me and says, I think the Pelicans can be a top four seed in the West, I'm not thinking it's hyperbole. I'm not thinking they're crazy.
I said the same thing earlier today. Yes.
So if somebody said that at the beginning of this year, and there were people who would have said it, I would have said, are you out of your mind? But now, having seen this, there's legitimate basketball reason to say, yeah, you look at the West and what is and what could be, and we'll get into this in another pod. The Pelicans are right there. They're right there, Fish.
Yep. I mean, the thing is that the West is going to be hard. The Clippers are going to come up, but
yeah, but
come hell or high water, the Pelicans, the Pelicans should view themselves coming into the next season as a team that can be better than play-in. That can be a top six seed. And they're not worried about what other teams are going to do to make that happen. That's within their control.
They got to get home court. That's going to be so big for this franchise to be a top four. Because home court is clearly something that they historically and presently, as we saw.
Yeah.
I mean, it's home court is so important to this franchise that I think they need to be playing as if they're and a lot of this obviously hinges on Zion Williamson, but I think even next year, if you took this group and you said, if Zion, we didn't know if he existed or not, you know what I'm saying? Like if you just took this team. A year of it next year, I would still say is at least a near 50 win team.
Yeah, I'd put them over 50 if you want to go on the upper end. Yeah.
All right, guys. I think we nailed it. And like I said, we'll be back throughout the off season. We'll talk. The lottery's coming up, so of course we'll have to talk about the draft as we get closer to that as well. We'll have to talk about free agency. We'll have to talk about potential trades. All those things. And look, you know, Fish is has a notebook like a rapper's got a rhyme book. He's got a book full of trades that he wants to talk about, and he's accounted for every penny to make these things happen. I'm telling you, so there's plenty of content to come. So
yes, sir. Yeah, we're probably going to do some trade pods, right? Because I think it's necessary. Because let's face it,
draft. We got to talk about the draft and the lottery first, and then we can.
Yeah.
And then when we know how that's broken down, we can start talking.
Yeah, the draft is such, the lottery is so huge for this franchise.
Yes.
In many number, any number of ways. I mean, can you imagine a number one pick? Can you imagine?
The top four pick.
Can you imagine just a top four pick for me? Yeah. I mean, my God.
Any of those dudes, man. It'd be great.
Yep.
Yep. Can you imagine just being – even the power of it. Mm-hmm. The power of it, depending on whatever.
You had Zion. You had a Jabari Smith or a Jaden Ivey. Are you kidding me? Chet Holmgren, for those that believe. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. On behalf of David Fisher, on behalf of Ollie Cosell, I am David Grubb. This has been The Bird Calls. And in the words of our dear friend, Preston Dallas, who cannot stay up past 9 o'clock, let's go, Pelicans.
Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.